Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Serving as a foreign correspondent in Asia for the last 19 years, Michael Schumann has traveled extensively in the region and has vast experience conducting research and reporting in much of East Asia. In his new book, Confucius and the World He Created, he reveals the philosopher is not only alive and well, but gaining in stature. Schumann says, what we in the West have to appreciate is that East Asian civilization has an entirely different philosophical foundation than our own, to a great degree, a Confucian foundation. Again, the title of the book is Confucius and the World He Created, and it's a great pleasure to welcome Michael Schumann to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us, sir.
Thanks for having me on.
What brought you to Confucius and looking at, yes, this world he created?
Yeah, I actually started this project with only the most cursory knowledge of Confucius and what he was about. But to a certain extent, that's the idea. I lived in Asia for 19 years, and you kind of live with Confucian influence around you, and I realized, you know, I don't know that much about this stuff, and I think I should. And what made me feel that way is that, you know, China and much of the rest of East Asia is kind of rising on the world stage and becoming more and more important politically, economically, and, of course, culturally as well to all of us. And I thought that people in the West really need to learn more about Confucius and the impact that he had so we can better understand Asia and better contend with this, what is really probably the most important geopolitical shift that we're going to see in the 21st century, the rise of Asia.
Talk a little bit about Confucius himself, of what we know, and ultimately how much of what we know now, or how much we believe and we take, is factual.
Well, you know, like any figure from deep antiquity, you know, we're left with kind of scanty records about what he actually said, what he did, who he was. There are references to him and his life and scattered across various historical texts and philosophical texts. Some of it comes from famous Confucian texts like the Analects. Like many people of that age, we're kind of left wondering, okay, what did he say and what did he say and what's reliable and what's not? And that's something historians and philosophers have been trying to figure out for centuries and centuries and centuries. The basic story is that he was a scholar who was born in the 6th century BC, who studied the wisdom and history and literature of an even earlier age in China, and from that he fashioned a doctrine that was based on virtue and benevolence that he thought would bring peace and order to a China that at that time was really ravaged by war. And over the time, over the centuries, like most doctrines, you know, nothing stays fixed. So over time, as more and more people studied and wrote about his teachings, it developed into this amazingly complex philosophical system that really became the foundation of much of East Asian civilization.
And that's what you talk about, this of how much influence it had, and yet how much influence it still has.
It's easy to go around Asia today. If you go to Shanghai, you go to Tokyo, and it's easy to say, okay, well, the traditions are in retreat. Globalization has affected Asia like it's affected all of us, and you know, people in Seoul or Beijing like their, you know, Starbucks mocha lattes as much as the rest of us. So it's, to a certain extent, you can walk around and things will feel very familiar. But, you know, Confucian ideas laid the foundation for how people interacted with each other, how families members deal with each other, how governments operate for, you know, such an incredibly long period of time that, you know, globalization is just not going to wash this stuff away in a short period of time. So I think when you go a little bit beyond kind of the surface, you find out that Confucian ideas still hold a lot of influence in what happens in Asia today. And that's why if families operate differently, companies are different, governments are different than here in the West.
You make an interesting point about traditions often going into retreat, but this one not. Did it ever at any point? Because it is growing even more and more in China, you point out in the book.
Well, you know, like all traditional societies, you know, Asia's not as Confucian as it was 300 years ago, just like, you know, the West has changed as well with all kinds of new technology and new influences and new ideas. So, yeah, I mean, to a certain extent, Confucianism has been in retreat, and in the 20th century especially, Confucius was seen as in Asia as kind of an impediment to progress. He was considered kind of a feudal leftover with a lot of archaic ideas, and that if China and the rest of East Asia was going to move forward to become stronger economically, stronger politically, that basically it had to copy ideas from the West. So at the same time, what you're seeing today is as a result of East Asia's tremendous success, that people are returning to their traditions in new ways. And one academic I spoke to about this, he calls it cultural confidence, that now that East Asia's been so successful, there are people who are starting to think, hey, you know, maybe we can be modern and successful and Asian. We don't have to be modern and successful and Western. And I think you're finding people looking back to the Confucian classics, reading this stuff again, and trying to find new value in it for their own lives, in, you know, to contend with a region that's experiencing incredibly rapid social and economic change.
Let's go to some specifics that you point out in the book. And you say that Confucian ideas can often explain why women play a minor role in business and politics in East Asia.
Confucius himself did not say a whole lot about women in the comments that historians consider to be relatively reliable. What he did say wasn't all that positive. He did, in one famous passage in the Annals, lump women and servants together, which he's still trying to live that one down. His ideas formed the basis of a system that became more and more entrenched over time as it became more elaborated by later Confucian thinkers, that really relegated a role for women to what would be called like the inner realm, the household, raising children, managing the home, while the outer realm was for men. That would mean politics and commerce and civic life. And this separation became very, very hard and fast in kind of the old imperial days in China. So it was very difficult for a woman to, you know, be a politician, almost impossible. And though, of course, that's changed to a certain extent, if you're, you know, a very career-oriented woman, especially in, let's say, South Korea and Japan right now, you run into a system that is kind of an outgrowth of this separation of duties. That makes it very difficult for women to rise up in the corporate world. They're still, to a certain extent, expected to be at home like Confucius wanted them to be. And that shows up in numbers. I mean, the International Monetary Fund did a study in 2012 that showed that only 9% of management positions in South Korea and Japan were held by women, while about 43% were in the United States. So this is one of those legacies of Confucius that you could argue is not having a positive effect. These economies are kind of marginalizing a large part of their human resources and talent, which isn't good for their competitiveness.
You point out the influence that Confucius and his teachings had on children of East Asia, that continues to have, and why they are such high achievers when it comes to education.
Confucius believed that learning was absolutely essential for self-development, that even if you were inherently a good person or you wanted to do the right thing, that if you weren't educated, you could still find yourself going astray. And he saw education as a lifelong process, that you were constantly trying to improve yourself to be better and to learn more. And these ideas became very, very entrenched in East Asian society, and scholars have been very, very highly regarded since antiquity. And you see that playing out today. I mean, in Asian schools, You know, the smart kids are the cool kids. And this devotion to education is one reason why you're seeing all these Chinese students show up at Harvard, why you see in headlines that, you know, kids in Shanghai are outscoring Americans on standardized tests, and why you read about all these tiger moms that are pushing their kids to do better and better and better. This is all a legacy of Confucius.
That also spills over into the business world as well, right, for CEOs and how they run their corporations?
Yeah, you'll find that a lot of Asian companies do operate differently than Western companies, and in most of all, I think in management employee relations, the family in Confucianism was kind of the basis of society, and other aspects of life have taken on family like attributes. So the company is one of them. You'll find that workers tend to be much more loyal to their companies than you would see in the West. And you'll, in many cases, not all, of course, but in many cases, you also find management taking a much different attitude towards their employees. You know, for example, during the 2008 financial crisis, American CEOs were laying off workers by the millions. And in East Asia, by contrast, you were seeing companies issue press releases saying that they will not lay off a single person. And I met one businessman in South Korea who had made this decision that he makes locks. He's about 200 employees. And he decided when the crisis hit, and even though his sales were falling, that he was not going to release a single worker. And he did that, he said, because, oh, well, I'm the head of the family, he called himself, and employees have to be treated like family. So it's in this way, I think maybe companies around the world, as we're dealing with issues like income inequality, unemployment, and these other negative aspects of the economic system today, maybe some CEOs in Europe and the U.S. could benefit by looking at some of these Confucian influences practices in Asia.
As we wrap up, you do talk in the book also about how Confucius has been misunderstood in our modern times.
Well, you know, when I started this project, I held this image of Confucius in my head that he was some kind of arch conservative who supported dictators and, you know, thought women should stay barefoot and pregnant. And there's been a lot of anti-Confucius rhetoric in Asia and outside of Asia over the last 150 years. But when I actually went back and read the original classics, and you look through the Analects, which is the most famous of Confucian texts, and you realize that that's really not what Confucius was about at all. That he had a message that basically, if everybody tried to do the right thing, that society would be better overall. That by perfecting yourself, you could have a greater impact, a positive impact on the world. And there's aspects of this stuff that was first discussed 2,500 years ago in a very, very different age with different priorities and different social ideas. So, yeah, so some of it today we'll look at it and say, okay, this stuff doesn't make sense for us. But that's true of a lot of doctrines and faiths. I mean, there's stuff in the Bible that, you know, doesn't make sense for us today. If we listen to the Bible, we'd still be owning slaves and things like that. But we go back to the Bible and we find things in it today that mean something for us and help guide us today in the modern world. And you can do the same with Confucianism and Confucius text, and there's elements there that are timeless and universal that transcend the age. I think that's what Asians are looking for today, and you know, Chinese and Koreans when they read the Analects, I think they're looking for that kind of spiritual guidance and new ideas to help them in their own lives in the modern world.
The name of the book is Confucius and the World He Created. It is published by Basic Books. Michael Schumann, thank you very much for spending time with us. I appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you very much for being with us. Again, the title of the book, Confucius and the World He Created. Michael Schumann is the author, published by Basic Books. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.